Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine. This is our special trade deadline edition, post-trade deadline.
Is it
deadline.
Edition or episode?
Well, this episode is an edition.
Isn't it an edition
for anybody who doesn't recognize this guy, this is Jason Williams, an antagonist from a colleague of ours who's filling in for Pat. Pat's doing double duty these days on Bengals and Reds. And in fact, it's kind of funny because Sal Stewart's over at Bengals practice hanging out with Jamar Chase. So
he loves Jamar Chase.
Like it's totally Pat Brennan's world right there colliding. And so Pat can't be here. But Jason is...
Two of our few sports personalities that we have in this town.
Exactly.
Jamar Chase and Sal Stewart.
That they have personalities at all is what I think you're alluding to.
Exactly.
Here. Yeah.
We're a sports town void of very many personalities, and those two have it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well,
it's
thank God we have your
thank
personality
you.
Here today, because we want to dive right into this... nothing burger of a damn trade deadline for the Reds. I've got some thoughts on why it went down that way, but yeah, you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts about how they were only able to move Nathaniel Lowe and Caleb Ferguson. Caleb Ferguson, I think, was for a bag of $250,000 in international cap space. Are you kidding me? This is all they did?
Yeah, my initial thought on that was probably the same thought that most diehard fans have, and that's like, what the heck? And my thought was like, it doesn't matter. Move these guys for a bag of balls.
Yeah,
get something
because you get
take a flyer on some low A guy or whatever. But then after hearing Nick Kroll sat down with all of us for, I don't know, goodness, half hour, 45 minutes yesterday at the ballpark.
Kind of outlining what went down. And I talked to some people. I talked to some other people in the organization. I talked to some people outside the organization.
Yeah.
And there just wasn't interest in these guys.
Correct. Obviously, you know, Nick Kroll didn't just directly come out and say that.
But he did allude to it.
You could read between the lines and say, I mean,
Seth Stevenson really, was the one that surprised me that because there were a lot of teams that wanted catchers out there, and there's a lot of teams that are just down on his defensive skills.
Correct.
And honestly don't trust the streak that he's on offensively.
Right. And then, you know, there wasn't a huge market out there. I thought it was, you know, it wasn't a huge market out there for Brady Singer.
That's an interesting one, right?
I agree because
they're going to keep him. Maybe into next year.
And I like it. I wrote about that today.
Yeah.
Let me
outline this for a minute because they had 7 pending free agents. That's why we thought maybe 6 of them, you just trade for a bag of balls because actually going in, I thought nobody was really a candidate for a qualifying offer because qualifying offer is what gets you draft pick compensation if your free agent leaves. So you got to give him a qualifying offer. That means $23 million. You got to offer him a $23 million contract for next year. And I didn't see any of those guys being candidates for that. However, Brady Singer looks like the exception. And assuming he finishes the season healthy, he's going to get a qualifying offer from these guys. But the rest of them, 6 other guys, they traded 2 of them, but the other 4... bag of balls, you know, that would be more than you're going to get.
Well, but you got to have someone even willing to give you a bag of balls, and no one wanted Eugenio Suarez. No one wanted
him. Here's the flip side of that. Like, we can say that all day long if we want to, that you could just give him away. Sure, you could, but they have to commit a roster spot to this guy, too. They have
Correct.
To decide that this guy is going to be better than their worst player on their roster or in that position area. And there just wasn't that out there.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I want to ask you about something.
I know Reds fans are ticked, but there's a lot of nuance to this.
Mm-hmm.
As frustrating as this season has been, there is still a plan in place They are still, building into that starting pitching depth. They do need to take some risks and try to move this thing into a position where you're going to start getting more elite fielders, because that's the other part of if you're going to be a pitching team, well, you're going to have to be a fielding team as well.
You've got to catch the ball. I mean, just look up the road at Milwaukee. I mean, they've got some good pitchers, no doubt, and they've had good pitchers over the years, no doubt. But as far as their depth goes, they don't have the depth that the Dodgers do or teams like that. But they make their depth better because they catch the ball behind these guys.
Correct.
And that makes a difference over the course of a season. We've seen it as these guys have produced the best record in baseball last year and again going into the trade deadline this year. I want to give you one theory, and then I want to ask you a question. I looked at this in retrospect and thought maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised that they literally couldn't move some of these guys when I look back at the process of acquiring them. Because if you go back to the offseason when many of these players were signed, the Reds are dealing with, as we talk about every damn year, a budget restraints. Mm. You know, the owners don't give them enough money to do what they need, even when they reach these competitive moments and can really help the roster. So a lot of the guys we saw a couple of trades, and then we saw guys that got signed kind of later in the free agent process. They were the guys that other teams had already passed on.
Correct.
So that by the time we get to a trade deadline where some of them didn't perform anyway, And maybe even some of them did perform. Brock Burke has had a really nice season. These were guys that were already passed on once for better options by some of these teams. And now there are maybe better options out there that were grabbed by the teams that now were trying to be more aggressive at the trade deadline. So to think that you could suddenly take these players that were of secondary value in the offseason and flip them for any kind of value midseason, maybe that was foolish of me to think. And it wouldn't have been the first time.
I mean, I don't know. You would think a guy like Brock Burke would have had the value as a lefty reliever who leads the majors in appearances, I believe, right?
Yeah, and he's got a 250 ERA. And
veteran reliever who's...
he's pitched in a World Series?
That's the guy, like... That's the guy you would think that teams that are in that playoff push would covet. Like, we need this guy to come in and get a couple outs.
And Stevenson. I thought Stevenson would have more value again, especially with like I think five or six teams
we thought for sure. You know, we kept seeing other catchers go elsewhere, and we knew the Yankees needed a catcher. And you're getting down the wire there, and you're like, okay, it's coming here. They're just working it out. Yankees weren't interested.
At the end of the day, the Yankees just decided not to get a catcher.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy to me. They could have got him. They could have got him and just taken a flyer on him.
Right.
But that's where they viewed his value.
I think the other part of this, too, is that the Reds, in some of these deals, were potential deals anyway. Sorry, potential deals. Is that they were being asked to pick up contract down the stretch on some of these guys. And that, the whole point here is I don't think they wanted to do that, right?
Well, but these are sunk costs. So God forbid, if you had a chance to move Pierce Johnson, who's really had a rough year, he was making $6.5 million. He's got over $2 million left on that contract. If you have to pick all of that up, I think you do it because, again, what you're buying is a lottery ticket. If they give you an A-ball guy who might turn into something someday, that's better than zero for the same price.
But what I think was happening was that teams were only offering a bag of balls and also saying, and pick up a chunk or all of that guy's contract.
Yeah, and only a few.
And so they weren't giving a lottery ticket in return for that is sort of my understanding of probably how some of that stuff was going down.
Well, I mean, again, if you're a team that's contending and, look, the team that picked up Caleb Ferguson, was a team that's not contending. They were a seller. So they're just getting somebody to throw on the roster. And I'm not even sure he's going to stick over there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a move, and it didn't even cost them a player. So they get a left-handed reliever who's just kind of a serviceable major leaguer who's having a rough go of it right now to finish out the string for them at very little cost. And it, and all it cost them was some international amateur cap space.
Hey, real quick, can you explain for the casual fan what the heck that mean? The Reds traded a pitcher for international cap space money. What the heck does that mean?
Other than players, like you know, you can trade for cash. One of the things you can trade these days is cap space for international amateur acquisitions, bonus pool money. It's capped. Hard capped. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that major league payrolls are soft capped with a luxury tax
and
threshold.
That's all relatively new. That's new in this contract, right?
It's been around for a couple of CBAs, but
it has, okay.
But it's fairly new. And it means that every team goes into a draft with X amount of bonus pool limits. You cannot go a dollar over that. So, and that's a hard cap with some very severe penalties. And you can distribute that any way you want, but each of your picks is slotted with a certain value and you add it all up and it's this. But if you want to give your first round guy less than that slot, you can, and pay your second round guy more than his slot, you can do that. But your pool has to all come out. The international signing period, the Dominican players, the Venezuelan players, et cetera, that's also capped at a similar level. So, these are all based on, you know, formulas of, based on draft order, really. And so you can only spend that much when you're going after these in free agents, these 16-year-old free agents. Sure. In the Dominican and Venezuela, you can only spend this much. So what they got was $250,000 more in cap space that they can now spend on the next Ellie De La Cruz if they find him.
And on the other side of that, the St. Louis Cardinals, who acquired Caleb Ferguson, gave up $250,000 of that pool of money,
which may say something about what they think of the upcoming signing period or who they've got on their radar to sign or what they think they've already got in house.
But you don't see that a lot, right? You don't see a lot of trades.
The reason it feels like you don't see that a lot, and you know, it's not as common as a player-for-player trade, but those are also very low-level trades typically, or that's something that gets thrown in to finish a deal. And sometimes it's not even reported as part of the deal widely. Sure. So
I know it's in the weeds and nuance, but you know, sometimes you're kind of like, wait, what does that mean?
No, so, I hear you. But I wanted to ask you something. Let's get back to the big picture of this trade deadline for the Cincinnati Reds. You had a really interesting column, and I think people ought to go check out Jason's column in Cincinnati.com on what this trade deadline meant for Hunter Greene, who, by the way, was part of some of their trade talks. And had he been performing better coming off the IL, might have actually had a chance to be moved. But you had a really interesting take on what the fallout of the trade deadline might mean for Hunter's future.
Well, their decision, the Reds' decision to keep Brady Singer, there's a domino effect there.
If he accepts a qualifying offer,
then there's a potential domino effect there. There's so many. It's so nuanced, obviously.
Yeah,
as so many things are in baseball. It's not football. It's not just line up and try to plow over the other team.
Yeah.
But if Hunter Greene performs well down the stretch here, and I really believe if Hunter Greene had been healthy this season and they were still in this position, or maybe he'd been pitching for a month sooner than what, you know, he had been, you may have well seen him moved here at the deadline.
Yeah. I know some teams did talk to them about him.
You and I have talked about this. It's our understanding. This is the first time the Reds have at least entertained talks of trading Hunter Green. As you and I have both written that we have said the Reds should have traded him last year. You were the first to write that.
We're not a couple of haters here. That's not what this is about.
This is about value. But it's also some things that you're hearing behind the scenes among some people in the organization. Yes, when you are a fan and you see Hunter Green and you think about all the hype about Hunter Green over all those years.
And the all-star appearance.
And the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And you think about World Series Game 7 and Hunter Green being that guy. Like, yes, but it just hasn't happened. They haven't won with him. Yeah. He hasn't been on the mound. He came up in 2022. And he's yet to pitch a full season in the big leagues.
26 starts is his career high by a fairly significant amount.
We've seen enough to know. And if you want to become the Milwaukee Brewers, if you want to become the Tampa Bay Rays, which how do you argue with the success of those franchises?
Yeah.
You have to take some risks and you have to be willing to part with some of your hot shot players that you pinned your future to, or at one point you pinned your future to, and this is the guy.
How many times
this is the guy you've got to trade?
I think you mentioned these guys in your column. How many times have we looked at the Milwaukee Brewers in the last 3 or 4 years and said, okay, well, they traded Corbin Burns, they're not in it this year, and they win the division again. They traded Josh Hader, they're not in it, and they win the division again. They trade Freddie Peralta, their opening day starter, they're not in it this year, they win the division again. It's because they trade at a high value point that's ahead of the sort of predictions for the guy when they know they're not going to re-sign him or haven't been able to re-sign him. And then they get back pieces that help their major league club, sometimes in the moment and sometimes like the next year, so that they might not get a one-for-one player value back in those deals, but they get three serviceable contributors to their team, maybe a starter here, maybe a pitcher here and a everyday player there, and they stay sustainable.
They get guys like Spencer Steer.
Yeah, who?
I'm generally speaking.
I hear what you're saying.
You
and I both agree. This guy is not a spectacular numbers producer, but this guy helps you win.
Consistency.
He plays all the time. He's a good hitter.
In my mind, the Reds need more. They need more Spencer Steers. They need more Brady Singers.
But they also need to have a guy like you got Chase Burns now.
But they do. They have the hammer.
So they got Chase Burns. And they got Andrew Abbott's a nice all-star lefty who doesn't blow you away, but he posts and he competes. If Nick Lodolo's healthy, by the way, he was another guy that could have been traded, if not for his blister issues. But I hear you. You also need those guys too. You know, you need your Ellie, or maybe next time around it's Sal. But yeah, the Steers, you need a bunch of Steers.
But back to the Brady Singer. I mean, Brady Singer in his last 10 starts, 2.70 ERA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the only, and you dug this up last night as we were sitting at the ballpark. He's the only Red starter in the last two seasons so far through two seasons that, has not gone on the injured list.
Yeah. And that's not a coincidence.
This is the guy that Terry Francona and Nick Kroll, they love this kind of guy. And it's not just the fact that he'll take the ball. He battled again. Everybody has their own. You always have to be careful about injuries, because only you, the individual person, knows their body, obviously. Yeah. So you're always careful. And I know that's hard. It's a challenge for us in our industry, is, you know, what's that fine line between, you know, you got to do a lot of reporting. You got to do a lot of asking about when it comes to people's injuries.
And you still can never know.
And you still can never fully know. Correct. Full disclosure. But Brady Singer pitched through the blister issue back in April.
I think it was his last start in spring training. So it was as soon as the season started, He was pitching through a blister.
Got drilled on the ankle or foot by a line drive, stayed in the game. That's the kind of guy the Reds need. That's the kind of guy, like, yeah, is he, again, is he going to blow you away and strike out 10 guys in a start? No. But he's going to consistently take the ball. And this is the kind of guy.
He's going to compete.
He's going to compete. I mean, think of him as like a Nick Martinez type from the impact that he has on the pitching staff. I mean, Nick Martinez,
the last guy that got a qualifying offer.
And he was an all-star this year for Tampa Bay.
Last year, he played on a $22 million qualifying offer that the industry said was ridiculous. And those of us close to the team understood why they did it, because of what that guy means, not only as a versatile guy on the mound, but what he meant in that clubhouse to all those young players. And it played when they made the playoffs.
And the Reds and all of their they view Brady Singer in a similar way.
Yeah,
he's like Brady Singer,
not quite as high.
But view him in a way like, oh, what kind of impact is he having on? Is he a role model guy?
Right.
Like, well, if this guy's going to take the ball, then, you know, Andrew Abbott, who's, you know, a bulldog of a guy.
And by the way, Chase Burns is, too.
Chase Burns is a competitor. You could say they're all competitors. I mean, if you make it to this far in your career, you are a competitor.
No doubt.
On a level that none of us can really fully comprehend. But you're on another gear of competitor.
Yeah.
When you look at a guy like Chase Burns. And so you look at the impact Brady Singer is a 30 turned 31 today, actually on August 4th. You look at him as a veteran guy who takes the ball, who's that extra notch of a competitor, who gives you a chance to win more often than not.
And he gives you innings. I mean, this is why they traded for him, because they had so many injury issues in previous years. Even though it looked on paper like they had a lot of starting pitching depth going into last season,
right?
They made that trade because they needed one guy to see, sort of be an innings linchpin to that group who they could count on. This guy will always be there. So if we got him and two guys fall to the wayside, but we've still got these other two guys for this month, and then those two guys fall to the wayside, and these other two guys come back, Brady Singer is going to be the one constant in there. And that's something they didn't have. In 23, when they missed the playoffs, surprisingly getting into contention and then missing the playoffs by a game, if that game is against the D-backs, two games otherwise, that's all they needed. If they'd have had one just regular back-end rotation guy who did nothing more than post in addition to what they had, they'd have been in the playoffs that year. And so he does make a difference in winning and losing. And I want to say this. I want to point out something and let you complete your thought on Hunter Green and what this means for him. But what we've seen is Hunter Green is spectacular when he's healthy. He's one of the best pitchers in the game. We've seen it. He turned a corner in 2024, and 24 and 25, you put them together, he's like 16-9 in 40-something starts, and a 2.76 ERA. Tons of strikeouts. That's who he is when he's healthy. But also, in 2025, when they made the playoffs, they were 39-33, so six games over 500 when he was on the IL, and they had a losing record when he was not on the IL. Now that's not all him, because he only pitches every 5 days, so you can take that for what it's worth. But the point was, they won without him.
Well, and I still have, it's seared in my memory because I'm still feel like I'm seeing the ball go up in the air and. I'm not sure if it's landed yet, but as I'm sitting here munching on my Dodger dog in the press box.
Shohei Ohtani.
In Los Angeles last year at beautiful Dodger Stadium in the first inning of game one.
Yeah.
Hunter Green started. This is what we heard all these years. Hunter Green is the playoff pitcher. And right
hometown,
out of the
gate, too.
In his hometown and right out of the gate. It was Shohei Ohtani whacking one to right field. And over the fence in right field. And, you know, it was a disaster of an outing for Hunter Green. Okay, one time in the playoffs, but
Well,
we've seen enough.
Can I throw a disclaimer in there now? And anybody can take this however they want to take it. Look, when he had the elbow thing this spring, when he came out and finally fully disclosed his elbow issue. So in November, I guess it was November, he went to the doctor. They said, you got bone chips in there. And they did a platelet rich injection or whatever that was supposed to fix it. It didn't. In March, he has surgery to remove the chips. That's why he missed most of this season. But he said it began bothering him toward the end of last year. So he may have been pitching through some discomfort in that start. At least that's what we were told.
No, fair enough. I mean,
but your larger point is, I mean,
if you're taking the ball in game one,
he's the man.
You're the man, and you're expected to pitch better than that. And I was trying to look up what he did in his final few starts there down the stretch. I mean,
There was another one at Dodger Stadium.
Remember the September 18th, just the absolute beautiful, the shutout against the Cubs.
He does that to the Cubs all the time.
But yeah, was the elbow an issue there?
Yeah.
And then, two or 3 weeks later? I mean, maybe it was. Maybe it became a problem.
It was. When was the regular season game at Dodger Stadium? Because it was also in September, wasn't it? Or it might have been right at the end of August.
August 19th.
Because he didn't fare well in that one either.
He did not pitch well there, no.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like I'm piling on Hunter Green, but at some point the Reds have to take a chance. They have to they've got to shake things up somehow, some way. They've got to take a chance, and this seems like the guy to do that with.
So
this
you're
seems
the
like the guy that you've got to move and try to get other pieces to try to take that next step.
To get the value that you couldn't get from any of these other
Correct.
Trade chips at the trade deadline, get the value that we've seen the Brewers get, that we've seen the Rays get when they've moved a guy like that. And maybe that gives you enough pieces that when you're treading in this, you're 500, a little over 500, maybe that's the difference in going on the 6 or 7 game winning streak that puts you over the top because you've got more pieces.
Wow. Now, I got a question. Are we done talking about Hunter Green?
The one thing about it is, we do have a labor lockout looming December 1st.
There is that.
And that's going to really muddy up the trade period in the off season. There may not be one after December 1st.
Right.
So this could be a very narrow window that you're talking about to get something done. He's also got the value of him that's different than some of these other guys is it's not just club control. It's not just, I got another year of arbitration with the guy who's an elite guy who might get, Tarek Skubal got 30 something million in arbitration. The last year he was with the Tigers. So it's not that kind of club. This is club control on a contract that's got two more guaranteed years at $15 and $16 million. And then a club option for $21 million in 2029 with a $2 million buyout. So that kind of cost certainty, if you believe in this guy, and there's no reason not to believe in the talent that this guy brings to the mound, that's a very team-friendly deal, especially for teams that have money.
No, you mean to move him?
To move him.
Oh,
like if you were going to move him, that's sort of a value-added part of the offer, if you're the Reds.
I mean, but it's also, and I know people are like, oh, wait, he's cheap here. I mean, what could the Reds do? What's he do next year, $15
million? 15.
Yeah, I mean, what could the Reds do with
15? They go out and get Gino Suarez again.
Well, but
no, I'm
what they get in return here, like you start to like go look at Milwaukee's payroll, go look at some of the players are performing there, how much they're making. There's a 15 million. They get a lot of production
and maybe
for that out of a couple, 2 to 3 players.
Yeah. And maybe over that 3 year period when you might be thinking to pay him, that includes the option year, then you got some tough decisions to make. Possibly, then maybe you can get extensions done too with some of that money.
My opinion here, my belief, my read. So I want to couch this by saying this. I truly believe that Nick Kroll and the baseball ops side of this organization tried to move these seven guys, as many of them as they could.
I think they tried to move all of them, including Singer, who I think the decision was made after gauging the market.
Yeah. On the other side of that, do you think, at least from the ownership side of things, and I asked Nick Kroll, and he's never going to, you know, obviously when he's talking to us.
Oh, he'll never say.
He's never going to
think bad about the owners.
Right. He's never going to say, I believe this and they believe that.
And I also think
that, I understand that.
I also think it's genuine. I mean, he's got a job to do, and here's the resources he's given, totally. And he does what he can with it.
Do you think that a little bit of this from the ownership side may have been like, maybe not going to be in next year. Let's just go ahead and see, like, if we can catch lightning in a bottle and make a run this year.
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because the fact of the matter is, when you look at this and you say, let's see. I think I've got it here right in front of me. I had it right here right in front of me. How many, as the trade deadline passed, they were 16 games out of first place. They were five games under 500, and they were
five games out in the wild card.
Six games behind the wild card, but with 6 teams they had to catch. And that's the thing. Issue. So, the thing about 6 games is, when you do magic numbers, 6 games is like you say, well, okay, if I win all my games and they lose all their games, you know, okay, I'm in. I make up the 6 games. But some of the teams ahead of them are going to play each other. So these other teams,
it's like a zero sum.
Like there's no chance. There's no mathematical chance.
Right.
When you got 6 teams in front of you, 6 games back, might as well be 10 or 12, because other teams are going to pick up wins where some of the others that you're trying to leapfrog are going to lose. So I just don't see a path. And honestly, I don't think they saw a path either, realistically.
Now, if you were over in the American League, which was the other way around,
without a doubt.
Last season, it was the American League that was really deep and strong, and the National League, obviously, with the Reds winning, 83 games, getting in with 83 wins last year.
Minnesota's a game out of playoff position, and they're under 500.
One game under 500.
The
Guardians are the third wild card team. They're only one game over 500.
Baltimore and Detroit are one game better than the Reds, and they're two and a half out.
Yeah. Correct. Right.
So
Reds, if they were over... Yeah, right.
Nick Kroll this a few weeks back. I said, would your calculus be different if you were in American League with the same record? Yep. Does the tougher National League make a difference? And he said, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't think, and you know, I mean, you know, we criticize ownership, and I think they should, I think historically, recent history, they should have been doing more for this club as it got better. I think they still could do more than they do. So I have been critical of ownership, but I don't think they're stupid. I don't think I don't think they go in and say, hold all these pieces. If anything, that ownership group would be more likely to say, trade them for anything you can get so that we have the cleanest books possible as soon as possible as we head into the off season.
Yeah, I know as frustrating as this season's been, especially after that hot start, I don't think all it's, you know, and again, 30 be 31 seasons here in a couple months. It'll be 31 seasons since they've won a playoff series.
Yeah. Few playoff wins since then.
Exactly. I don't think the sky is falling.
Yeah. I don't think this is disastrous.
I don't think it's red alert mode.
No, but here's one thing. Look, like I agree with you, and I think going into next year they have a chance to compete. If they can get a little luckier with health next year, they've got just enough depth in the right places, and if they tweak the roster a little bit, get a little better at catching the ball, maybe find a way to score a few more runs, they could compete. They are still going to be in a tough division, at least top to bottom, because the Brewers show no signs of going anywhere. The Cubs aren't going to go anywhere.
Right.
The Cardinals aren't going to get worse. They did a lot better for the first half of this season than I thought they had a chance of doing.
Right.
And the Pirates have real talent on that roster. And some young guys that are just going to get better. And they were buyers at the deadline. So it's not going to get easier next year, but I do think that they have a chance to continue to come in and compete.
This team, at the end of the day, has to field the ball better. It has to field the ball better.
I asked Terry Francona about that the other day when he was talking about we need to get better and we've got some areas to fill. I said, listen, if you look ahead at this team and whatever happens at the trade deadline, but just going into next year, if you guys look to make improvements, is it just as important to get gloves as bats when you're talking about the non-pitchers? And he actually had a funny quote. He said, well, yeah, you always want to catch the ball. I mean, he says, but you know, we could put nine guys out there that are really good at fielding, but if they all hit 112, we're not going to be a very good team. We'll have some fast games, but we're not going to win a lot of games. He's right. But I also think he's kind of underplaying it a little bit. His Cleveland teams had a couple of guys in the lineup that were kind of monstrous, and he had a bunch of guys in the lineup that could catch the ball. And that
obviously
was
they had pitching.
Yeah, but your pitching always looks better when you got those guys behind.
Well, it goes hand in hand. I mean, if you're going to be a pitching team, you got to be a fielding team.
Yeah, if you're going to score league average or fewer runs a game, then you damn well better prevent fewer runs than average, and that. The easiest way to create the baseline is defense.
Yep. What else you got? Anything?
Yeah, I got one last thing for you, and then we can wrap it. You said something really interesting before we started this podcast. You think this team has a run in it.
Didn't we just talk about that?
We talked about them being competitive. I thought we were talking mostly about next year. But you think this team can do something this year because it kept most of the guys if they get healthy?
I mean, at this point, they're stuck with these guys now. So,
hell, I wonder if they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. These guys,
I wonder that too. Now, the September schedule was just absolutely brutal. Like, what do you got? The Dodgers seven times. Yeah. You got the Blue Jays in there. You got Milwaukee. What, six
and
times?
Finish with the Blue Jays. You got Milwaukee. You got the Cubs right before the month starts, and they just ramped up.
But they're 10-6
since
the All-Star
break. They've won 4 out of 5 series, including, three out of four against the Pirates.
Weren't they about the same place last year at this time?
Yeah, they had a better record.
They had a better record. Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't have fewer teams to jump over.
Yeah.
And that's all obviously math, and I suck at math. I don't know. Do they? I mean,
hey, maybe it'll be an entertaining August, right? I mean, and who knows what a run between now and the end of August does for your confidence level. And if, and we talked about Hunter Green, what if he's getting his legs under him at that point and he starts to get on a roll? And what if Lodolo's back and not having blister problems and he seems okay?
Right.
We already know what Chase Burns is doing. They're going to back off his workload a little bit, but he's going to keep pitching. Andrew Abbott, if they got some good pieces. And by the way, their closer is throwing the ball like he hasn't since last year. So they've got a shot. I mean, they've got a shot for a while.
I mean, you look at it, they got three with the A's. They've got three with, they go to Washington. Then you got the White Sox, who are obviously in first place.
Yeah, the White Sox are pretty good. They ramped up. But, I mean, if you win these next two series, you go into White Sox, you got a shot.
Then you got St. Louis for five, right? Is there a makeup game?
That's right. I think you're right. And they just won a series against them. And the Cardinals were sellers. I don't know how many guys they actually traded away, but they're not playing real well.
You got three with the lowly San Francisco Giants coming up later in the month.
So. And they sent some guys out.
So I think. Well, number one, you got to get back to 500 first, right? So you're five games under right now.
Yeah, and I don't think you're wrong. I don't think they're going to make a run to the playoffs, but I'm literally just
sort of throwing that question up and wondering, like, does this team have a run in it? They're 10-6 since the break. Hunter Green is back. They've got Chase Burns is a Cy Young contender.
I'll tell you what, man. If they can five games under 500 as we speak now. If they win the series against the A's and win two out of three, they'll be four games under. They win they'll be two games under if they win two out of three against the Nats. They could get to 500 in a couple of weeks, reasonably. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could do that, and then it'd be fun to watch. I don't know where it goes from there. I don't like their chances in September. This is still not a great team, but they could be fun to watch, especially if they get over 500.
Yeah, it feels a lot like 2024. You know, you kept waiting and wait because obviously,
but it never came. I don't think the 10-6 ever came.
And they're at about, what is August 4th? Here you go. So on August, interestingly, on August 4th, as we sit here today, it's August 4th of 2024, they were at the same spot. They were 53-58. Mm. And remember, that was one of those years you're like, if they could just get on, like, you know, a 6-7 game win streak.
Well, I think they were waiting for Hunter Green to come back too at one point.
And they were waiting for Hunter Green to come back, and it just never turned for them.
Yeah. Well, who knows what happens here? If they finish August strong, and one thing they did last year down the stretch was it looked like they were toast three times in September, and they had tough series coming up.
Yeah.
And they did enough to get there. So I don't believe they're going to get there, for the record. All right. But I think they could be fun to watch.
Yeah. And that's compete. Go compete. I think they could be fun to watch and then lay the groundwork for 2027. That's the point. If there's going to be a 2027.
And that's the bottom line.
That's out of their control. So,
and that's a great way to end this because I think that's the bottom line on the whole thing. Jason, thanks for filling in for Pat.
Great
appreciate
to be here.
So this is Jason Williams, our esteemed columnist. Read his column on Hunter Green. It's worth the read. And behind the scenes, we've got Phil Diddy on the greatest podcast producer
Silent Phil
in sports. And I'm Gordon Whitmire. Thanks for listening. We'll come at you with maybe something better to talk about next week on the Big Pod Machine. Have a good one.